from WILL's Illinois Newsroom. This is 217 Today. I'm Brian Moline. It's Thursday, August 5th. Coming up, today the internet is for way more than just entertainment, but rural areas are often the last to receive high-speed broadband. We'll learn more in just a few minutes. But first, these headlines. Masks will be required in all Illinois schools and child care facilities effective immediately. As Hannah Meisel reports, Governor J.B. Pritzker says mandating masks and expanding COVID testing in schools is the only way to prevent big outbreaks as the academic year begins.
Pritzker's decision comes after many school districts in Illinois had already announced masks would be optional when classes began. But that was before COVID's more transmissible Delta variant took hold across the country, with states like Florida and Arkansas seeing record numbers of COVID cases and hospitalizations, including in teens and young adults. The governor said he had no choice but to mandate masks in schools, citing both lower vaccination rates among teens and because kids under 12 aren't yet eligible for COVID shots.
I had hoped that a state mask requirement in schools wouldn't be necessary, but it is. The Delta variant is highly transmissible, more so than any other previous forms of this virus.
The mask requirement applies to all schools from pre-K through 12th grade, as well as indoor sports. I'm Hannah Meisel.
Illinois Republicans were quick to condemn Governor Pritzker's order for universal mask wearing in schools where COVID-19 cases are substantial or high. Gubernatorial candidate Paul Schimpf says the order undercuts the authority of parents, local school boards, and their superintendents. The former state senator says if he were governor, he would only issue such an order with backing from state lawmakers.
I would partner with the Illinois General Assembly, and I would be transparent. The truth is not afraid of transparency. J.B. Pritzker should be insisting on legislative oversight hearings.
GOP gubernatorial candidates Gary Rabine and State Senator Darren Bailey also criticized the governor's mandate. Both noted research that shows children are less likely to get seriously ill from the virus. However, the federal CDC has recommended that even vaccinated people should wear masks in areas where COVID-19 transmissions are substantial or high. School districts that were planning to allow some people to go without masks inside their buildings are making quick adjustments to the governor's order for universal masking. Fisher District Superintendent Barb Thompson wrote on the district Facebook page that they're checking with their attorney, insurance company, and state officials before updating their back-to-school plan, but she says it's unlikely any of them will advise them to defy the governor's mandate. Monticello Superintendent Vic Zimmerman tells the News Gazette that the mandate will actually make things easier for school districts that were struggling with the decision. He says his district will follow the masking requirements. Both superintendents were among about 200 across Illinois who signed letters in July asking the governor to let local school districts make their own decisions on COVID-19 safety measures. The total number of people fully vaccinated against COVID-19 in Champaign County has surpassed 104,000. Currently, just under 57% of the county's vaccine-eligible population and nearly 50% of the county's total population are fully vaccinated. County health officials reported 52 new COVID-19 cases yesterday. There are now 448 active cases in Champaign County, and the county's death toll from the virus remains at 160. There are now 19 county residents hospitalized with COVID-19, up one from yesterday. Still to come, we'll learn more about efforts to expand broadband internet service to rural areas. That story from Harvest Public Media is coming up next on 217 Today.
The 21st is where Illinois gathers for news, information, and daily conversation on politics, the pandemic, culture, and everything in between. I'm Brian Mackey, inviting you to join the conversation anytime, day or night, by leaving us a voicemail. The number is 217-300-2121, and we might play it on air. Then tune in Monday through Thursday at 11 a.m. on AM 580 and 6 p.m. on FM 90.9.
This is 217 Today. I'm Brian Moline. Rural areas are some of the last places to get high-speed internet access. Decades ago, they were also the last areas to receive electricity. Back then, the federal government set up cooperatives to help rural residents pay to install poles and lines to every farmhouse. Harvest Public Media's Seth Bodine looks at how bringing broadband to rural communities might be more complicated.
In Okemah, Oklahoma, Wi-Fi hotspots are in demand. The public library got six of the T-Mobile internet hookups in 2018. The waitlist was months long before they eventually got more.
It was a constant battle to to get people off that waiting list. And we don't have that problem now because we have so many.
She says logging onto the web is important for the town of 3000. It's not just for kicking it and watching Netflix. Internet access means jobs.
And nowadays, most employers are requesting you fill out online applications for jobs, and that's difficult for people because they didn't have access to it.
For most people in cities, it's just a matter of calling up the local cable or telephone provider. But right now, 1 in 5 people in rural communities like Okemah can't do that, according to the Federal Communications Commission. It's not so different from the situation with electricity nearly a century ago, when it was available in cities, but not small towns or farms. For families, that meant hand-washing clothes and working by the light of a lantern. An old documentary showed how lack of power could hurt a farmer's pocketbook.
It's hard to cool milk right in August if you haven't the right sort of pump or equipment.
The milk is sour, so the handler gives back cartons and the farmer loses money.
Sour milk, good for pigs. But the milk check won't be so big this month.
The solution to all this? The Rural Electrification Act. It gave low-interest loans to rural communities to form rural electric co-ops. Then they'd set up the electric lines and poles. It'd all be paid off in 30 years through monthly electric bills. Rural broadband faces the same basic challenge as electricity. For-profit companies don't want to invest. Hamid Vahadipur is the CEO of Lake Region Electric Cooperative, which provides broadband.
In rural areas, you can have less than 10 customers for every mile of fiber optics that you have, where in town, that number could go as high as 50 or 70 customers per mile. So it is difficult to provide this kind of service.
Bringing broadband to rural areas is more complicated than electricity. One of the reasons, there are already some providers, but they don't always provide truly high-speed access. Co-ops are interested in providing that service, but the cost might be too high even without the need to make a profit. Cooperatives share the cost of building broadband, just like they did when they built electricity. Chris Myers is the general manager of the Oklahoma Association of Rural Electric Cooperatives. He says the bills might be too high for smaller co-ops.
That cost might be $500 a month. Well, I don't know that people can afford that. And that's just a number. But just to break even, the cost would be so high that it'd be a problem.
About $4 billion a year have gone out to telephone companies to get them to expand broadband. Tom Wheeler, the former chair of the FCC, says it didn't work.
It wasn't working because we still have this huge swath of rural America that doesn't have access to broadband.
Instead, Wheeler says building broadband infrastructure needs to be handled more like roads.
Build it once and pay for it and go home. Instead of this trickling out of money to companies that were basically telephone companies in the hope that they would expand and build broadband.
The FCC estimates it would take about $80 billion to bring broadband to every home. Between Biden's proposed infrastructure bill and CARES Act money, experts like Wheeler remain hopeful that it might happen sooner rather than later. Seth Bodine, Harvest Public Media.
And finally, in your forecast, meteorologist Andrew Pritchard says it will be sunny and mild again today with a high of 82 degrees. That's it for today. 217 Today is produced by Carolina Garibay. Reporting today contributed by Hannah Meisel, Jim Meadows, and Seth Bodine. Music by the Kilbourne Alley Blues Band. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I'm Brian Moldine. 217 Today is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening, stay safe, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.